This book is called Imaginary Lines. Border Enforcement and Origins of Undocumented Immigration, 1882 to 1930, written by Patrick Edinger. In this book, we find all the ammo that we need for Governor Mike Pence, if he's asked this question at the vice president debate tonight, to say that, well, historically, Congress has not always had all the cards when it comes to immigrating alien friends. Now, just to show you what a jilted age that we live in, we don't live in an age of enlightenment. We don't live in an age of intelligence. We don't even live in an age of study, of dialogue. We have people out there that are trying to cut dialogue off because he may be offensive. Well, isn't dialogue that is offensive usually offensive when it's not pornographic or obscene, usually offensive because you disagree with it? How are you supposed to have a discussion about anything if everyone that's in the discussion is going to agree? So here's the case. United States Court of Appeals, Seventh Circuit, argued September 14th, decided October the 3rd. Exodus Refugee Immigration, Inc., which, by the way, again, I'm going to say this again. Why are corporations suing the governor of Indiana for Syrian refugees to gain access to his state? You know, I can answer the question. So that he can send Obama a bill for it. That's why. And Obama can pay him. Again, the $4 trillion all-you-can-eat buffet on display here. The state of Indiana appeals from the grant of a preliminary injunction to a private agency named Exodus that assists refugees, some of whom are Syrian refugees, the state's target. The regulation of immigration into the United States, including by refugees, is a federal responsibility. Now, listen to this. Is a federal responsibility codified in the Immigration and Nationality Act. That act has been amended by the Refugee Act of 1980, which authorizes the president. Then he gets into what it says here. Now, wait a minute. You're telling me when you write something about a matter of constitutional concern like this, aren't you supposed to cite what clause of the Constitution the first act was written in pursuance of, or do you care? The fact of the matter is that nobody cares. And then there's this narrative that the judge writes out here. And what the judge basically does is says, well, I'm gonna review the facts of what or the opinion of the Pence administration when it comes to whether or not these particular refugees ought to be admitted in. And, of course, he finds that I can't find any problem with these Syrian undocumented immigrant refugees. You've got to let them in. Here's where we know the fix is in. Again, I'm reading from the opinion yesterday, which basically says Indiana has to admit into its state any foreign immigrants and refugees that the Obama administration or the Clinton or Trump administration says that they have to. From the ruling, to receive the federal money, a state must submit to the Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement a plan. Did you know that? How many of you people knew we had a Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement? I didn't know that. I wonder where they resettled. Is there a Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement International Edition that might resettle them back from whence they came? The Federal Office of Refugee Resettlement, a plan for using the money to assist refugees to achieve economic self-sufficiency. What does that mean? That means that if you're driving to work right now, if you're watching or listening to this at your workplace, and you have a mirror nearby, look in the mirror. Who's the sucker that's paying for the repatriation or the relocation of Syrian and other refugees that our bombing campaigns are not declared illegitimate wars and warlike actions in the Middle East have caused to be displaced? You are. I am. We're paying for this. The particular aims of the statute are to make available, Indiana, economic self-sufficiency. That sounds pretty subjective to me. Does that sound subjective to you? What makes one economically self-sufficient? Self-sufficient according to whose metric? Donald Trump's? Self-sufficient according to whose metric? Tim Kaine's? Who gets to decide here? Indiana has submitted such a plan, and it's been approved. Under the plan, the state contracts with private resettlement agencies for the provision of social services to refugees, and the agencies are reimbursed by the state for the cost. So, you see, ladies and gentlemen, this is not a humanitarian effort. This is a for-profit effort here. These people are profiting. Boy, isn't it? The military-industrial complex just continues to pay in spades, doesn't it? We get to pay to make the bombs. We get to pay to make the planes. We get to pay to make the munitions. We get to pay, or to be taxed to construct all these things. Oh, and then we have to have the political class that says, it's America's duty to lead from in front, not behind. And then what do? They find some area in the Middle East that's in need of some American exceptionalism, and they destroy it. You bomb the snot out of it. Kill non-combatants, kill women, kill children, it doesn't matter. You create a diaspora. Oh, what a great plan. So we enriched our buddies in the military-industrial complex by building the bombs, building the planes, building the guns, building the ships, building this, building the supplies, supplying this, building that, designing this, etc., etc. And then, after the damage, mayhem, death, and destruction has been meted out, wait a minute, we got a brand new set of friends. Oh, we have to be humanitarians now. We have to hold hands and sing the Coca-Cola song. We've got to teach the world to sing in one voice harmony. And we've got to bring those people in here. It's the humane thing to do, you see. And to not do so would make us not humanitarian. No, it would make us not seeking profit at the expense of human life. And furnish it with love. But I digress. Grow apple trees and honeybees and snow white turtle doves. Oh, I can feel it now, can you? I like to teach the world to sing in perfect harmony. I'd like to hold it in my arms and keep it company. I'd like to see the world. Shut up. So it's a racket. The whole darn cotton-picking thing is a racket. Human beings are being bombed out of their domiciles in the countries they live in. They're being made to be called salabras, refugees. And then they're imported into England, they're imported into Germany, and they're imported into the United States and other countries. And all the while, the good-hearted, good-natured people that are doing the repatriation are being paid for it. It's a for-profit endeavor, folks. Now, if you still think that there is something that is salvageable about a government and a people that are capable of doing this, please explain to me what it might be. We are now participating in, what if I were to change the titles, the proper nouns involved here? What if I were to say the Chinese, because they're across an ocean, right? The Chinese have, to support their military-industrial complex, have been making munitions and planes and bombs and bullets and flak jackets and you name it. And their political class have decided that they've had enough of our internecine affairs over here in the acrimony. It's a civil war over there in America! And decided that Detroit was in need of some Chinese exceptionalism. But hey, they're only doing it for humanitarian purposes. People are killing people in Detroit. We got to stop this civil war that's going on in the mean streets of Detroit. What would we think if the Chinese bombed out and caused a diaspora of 50, 60,000 residents of Detroit, Michigan? And did so by virtue of the fact that they just leveled their housing. Oh, but wait. The Chinese are at the ready. They're ready to accept the citizens of Detroit as refugees. Oh, and they have the Chinese Repatriation Refuge G Corporation, all ready to assist. Hey, we're going to make you sustainable in China, whatever that might be. What would you think of such a scheme? What if the Russians were doing this? You people that call yourself, quote, conservatives, close quote, and are actually war, 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 bomb, 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 kill, 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 war hawk Americans, what'd you think about that? You'd be all over Vladimir Putin. I know it. Former KGB, the whole thing was a ruse the whole time. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a government that is participating. Our government is making homeless people. And so that they can be relocated over here. As if that's not bad enough. What about the ones that don't survive to become refugees, huh? What about the dead carcasses that are piling up in Yemen? What about the carcasses that are piling up in Syria? What about the carcasses, the bodies of people that are piling up in Iraq and have been piling up in Iraq and every other hell-forsaken place on earth in Libya, thanks to Mrs. Clinton? Oh, but you're probably pro-life too, aren't you? Sure you are. What is there left to salvage when you know that American companies are signing off on this? Not only signing off, and they're lobbying to get for the right to, or for the privilege of taking part in this. This is unconscionable. It's unthinkable. Human trafficking. You would call this human trafficking if it were happening anywhere else in the world. But because we're doing it, it's called refugee resettlement. I sit here just aghast at this. Let me say to you that the little Florida Parish Republic here in southeast Louisiana, flying the Carillon de Sacre Coeur over her 40, 50, 60,000 citizens would be incapable of doing this. It would be incapable of printing the money and indebting the next generation, because who would loan dollars and cents or gold and Krugerrands for such a diabolical venture, huh? Who would do it? The little Republic of Georgia, with its 3 million inhabitants or 4 million inhabitants, would be incapable of doing it. But yet, the federal monstrosity, not only is it capable of doing it, it does it with impunity. And then the judge, blah, 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 blah. Listen to this. In the fiscal year 2015, Exodus, this is the company that sued Mike Pence, Exodus received roughly $1 million from the state for provision of social services and used the money to help 892 refugees, none of them Syrian. It expected to get 100 or more Syrian refugees the next year, which would be this year. But we don't know how many it's gotten thus far. Let's do that math, shall we? How much is that per social service, social work per refugee? 1 million. Divided by 92. That's $1,121 apiece. What kind of social services might one have administered? And is it possible that the social services were not administered, whatever they were, individually, instead were administered to large groups? See, they're administered to 30 at a time in an average classroom. What would that then equal? That'd be $33,632 per class. Nice work if you can find it, isn't it? Blah, 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 blah. Exodus, if unable. But we do know for certain that Exodus will receive nothing from the state for Syrian refugees this year unless we affirm the preliminary injunction. In other words, the suit was brought to force the taxpayers of Indiana to pay to relocate and then socially serve Syrian refugees until they're economically viable, whatever that means. And then there's more on the case, blah, 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 blah. The district judge granted a preliminary injunction in favor of Exodus because she believed it likely to prevail in the trial on the merits, that is the usual next stage of litigation after the issuance of such an injunction. She was right, and therefore the preliminary injunction is affirmed. And this is for the court of Tanya Walton Pratt, judge. Now, folks, What you've seen here is a horrible and gross miscarriage of justice here. I'd like to read something to you. To the claim or to the idea that the federal government has supremacy when it comes to the managing the affairs of alien friends. By the way, if I don't mention this from time to time, it won't get said. This is a live show. It is just a little after 10 Central Time, 11 on the East. And if you'd like to call the program and talk to me about anything that we've talked about here today, my telephone number is easy to call. If you have our app, which you can get in the iTunes Store and the Android Play, Google Play Store for Android phones, VeritasRadioNetwork.com. You could just click the Call Crusade Now button. Or you could call 844-527-8723. This from the book about the origins of undocumented immigration. Now, the book plainly shows that throughout the 18th and then 19th centuries, almost all the way to the end of the 19th century, Congress had no role, absolutely no role.
0.0.
In managing the affairs or ordering the states about to manage the affair of alien friends. What are called alien friends. Where do we get the term alien friends from? That's a municipal term. Comes to us from, if you want it from the mouth of a founding father, then look at the report of 1799-1800 by James Madison during the Virginia nullification crisis, as they called it, when Virginia was about to nullify or interpose against the Alien and Sedition Acts. James Madison said that the right of admission of alien friends into Virginia was never transferred to the federal government, and that since it wasn't, then it was reserved to the state of Virginia. And if Virginia then had the right to admit alien friends into its state, then it would also have retained the exact opposite power to cast out, to eject alien friends from your state. And this only makes sense. If you've got a carpetbagger from Mexico in your state and we had sanity and federalism and you didn't want them coming back into your state making mayhem that it had already made, you extradite them. You kick them out. At that time, we're not at war with Mexico. If they haven't violated any law but look likely to do so, you don't even have to have a reason. We don't want your kind here. Get out. We are under as a sovereign entity, it's not possible that you can be under a must-admit compulsory, what's the word, edict. It can't be. If you are, then you're not a, and you cannot possibly be a sovereign entity. Now, to Edinger's book. And by the way, it's a very expensive ebook. I bought it on your behalf, so I'll just read you. Here from the first chapter. Targeting paupers and. There's more, though. This starts in the 1880s. Nativism and the birth of immigration restrictions. Supreme Court decisions may have placed the issue of immigration firmly in the hands of Congress, but nativist impulses submerged in the political turmoil of the Civil War and Reconstruction, but reemerging in the economic crisis of the 1870s and 1880s created the political climate in which Congress abandoned its traditional reluctance to address immigration issues. Have you ever heard this before in your adult life? Have you ever heard that Congress's traditional position when it came to the immigration of foreigners, immigrants, they didn't have one. There wasn't one.